You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. We are back after a couple weeks away, and for Michigan football, so is everybody else. Jim Harbaugh announced that he is coaching Michigan in 2023. There was some NFL interest. He interviewed with the Denver Broncos. His name was being floated out for other jobs as well. And in addition to him, there's a lot of players who are coming back. Blake Corum, Chris Jenkins, Cornelius Johnson, Trevor Keegan. I mean, it's actually a pretty long list, a pretty remarkable list. It says something about today's college football that all these players would come back. Says something about Michigan, you know, keeping to their promise that the current or the players who are on the team, they want to compensate them, and it sounds like at least a few of those players, understanding that they can make significant revenue this coming season with another year of Michigan exposure, another year as one of the star players. So we'll talk about all of that. We'll start with Jim Harbaugh, though. Steve, we can go in a few different directions here. I'll let you kind of decide first. About 2 hours ago, it was announced that he would be coaching. It was Santa Ono, the Michigan's president, who initially announced it, and then they did that classic, you know, Jim Harbaugh quote tweet statement of Santa's tweet. I don't know why this is like Michigan just always has to announce things in the weirdest way. But regardless, your biggest thought right now when it comes to the Jim Harbaugh stuff and his decision to return and ultimately how this all transpired.
You know, these things, like, there's always, like, a lot of noise with this stuff, you know, and yeah, we cover it, the noise. The thing about Jim, it's he's never really, like, he's not a BS type of guy. We know that. We've heard what he's told players. We've had a couple of recruits, you know, being open about, you know, if an NFL team calls, I will listen, but I would prefer and I want to be at Michigan. Biggest takeaway for me is what direction this goes, like, say a year from now, 11 months from now, because for all intents and purposes, Michigan is, you know, at the very least going to be a top five, but I would say top three. I think you even tweeted before the show, they'll have a case at for number one. I fully agree with all the guys that, geez, this is the guys that came back in the last 24 hours with those guys all coming back. I mean, you know, you're not just talking about experience coming back. You're talking about major talent at important positions, particularly on both sides of the line. So, yeah, I just wonder if this is really it. The one thing you and I talked about before the show, which I think is kind of interesting with Jim in particular, is we see college coaches use other open jobs as leverage, like, all the time. You know, and I mentioned, like I said, we took beforehand, I mentioned James Franklin as somebody who's like, his name always seems to kind of come up when there's like a major open job. I know LSU, USC last couple seasons where, again, not the guy at the forefront of those coaching searches, but his name always seems to pop up. And he's been able to weasel at least two contract extensions out of open coaching jobs over the years. Jim's only leverage is with the NFL, you know, and these coaches, the agents, whatever, they make these leverage plays all the time. It's, and again, one of the other questions is it really about money for Jim, or are there other things about Michigan trying to improve the program from the top down, maybe that he wants to see a little bit more of with the NIL, that type of deal. But his only, he's not somebody who's ever going to leave Michigan for another college job. I think that's about as big a certainty as you can have. That means there's only the NFL out there. And the NFL, the sphere, the atmosphere, whatever, very public information. You know, I think somebody tweeted out the entire list of candidates for the Colts this afternoon. There was like 10 names on there, you know.
They're required to report that list.
Okay, yeah.
Or maybe not report the list, but everyone they interview with, I think they're required to, like, disclose that.
Correct. So with that, I mean, that makes the point even more, is, like, if a team even has him on their list, which, again, I mean, I still think now in San Francisco, he has one of the highest winning percentage, like a minimum, like, 60 or 70 games coach in NFL history. The guy can coach football. We know that he might be on a list every offseason, right? I mean, again, maybe not the top guy, but whether it's him throwing it out there or the NFL team has legitimate interest, that's really the only angle of leverage that he's going to have if he ever wants to negotiate his contract, you know? And like, as you said, Zach, like, if they have to report that, you know, that's the only way he may be able to, you know, get what he wants or, you know, get some changes that he's looking for or whatever. So that's, I think that angle of it, pretty fascinating. I had no doubt. And again, there's a lot of noise. I never really anticipated that he was actually going to leave. I think that was all, you know, and not only that, but I knew when he wasn't on the Colts list, if there was anything that wrapped it up for me and any doubt I had in my mind is when he was not on that list for Indy, given his career there, his relationship with Jim Irsay. Like, you know, I would have thought Indy would have at least been interested enough to give him an opportunity, right?
Have to think he was asked at one point.
Right. And I think the list was like 10 guys, and it's like, okay, Harbaugh's not on there. That was like 4 or 5 hours ago. It was before this was all announced today. And I thought, you know, again, already never really had much doubt that he was going to leave, or I mean stay. I figured he was going to stay the entire time, but that pretty much put the final nail in the coffin for me. So that's the big takeaway. I know there's also the AD president situation too, I think is a fascinating underlying storyline that kind of developed off of this as well.
Yeah, and that's probably where I'll go next. I'm kind of with you. I was never under the strong assumption that he would leave. I was a little surprised. I mean, I think I like woke up to the news that he interviewed with the Broncos, like what, 2 or 3 days after doing his weird "no man knows the future, but here's what I'm thinking" right. statement that was very useless in a lot of ways. Yes. But so I was a little surprised when he interviewed. That's when I went from like a 1 or 2 to like maybe a 3 or 4 on the certainty that he would return. Or scale. Yeah, the concern scale, but. But then when like nothing really came of it, and it wasn't like, you know, you didn't see the rumors like heating up, you know, that's when I was kind of like, all right, this sounds to me a little bit more like a negotiation. And the one thing that I told people during it that always jumped out to me is that this was kind of the first year that he was really using an agent. And I believe it was his brother's agent. And to me, that says a little bit different. If you know how his contract was agreed upon initially to come to Michigan, it was not like this agent, big, you know, financially motivated negotiations. Obviously, you know, taking that pay cut and not walking is another. I mean, he's not someone who has constantly been seeking, you know, the James Franklin, right, Mel Tucker type payday. That's not really his game. And so when I heard there was an agent, that's when I started to wonder if there was a negotiation component. And you know, I want to give our Sam Webb a ton of credit. I think his web blogs have really laid out both sides. I think both parties had something that they wanted to negotiate here. Harbaugh, I think I was a little surprised. I mean, if we really zoom out, he went 12-2, won the Big Ten, you know, pulled off National Coach of the Year caliber turnaround, and he ended up being the fourth highest paid coach in his own division. That was the rectification
the product, apparently. Yeah.
So that, you know, I don't think he was just looking for a paycheck here. But it was surprising last year that you know, it wasn't like this. Michigan didn't overreact to Harbaugh's success, which I think a lot of schools do when it comes to contracts. I mean, feels like Kirk Ferentz got an extension while we had this podcast, right? For pulling in a good transfer class. And so you know, Michigan didn't overreact, and I think the other thing that always jumps out to me, and this is a little bit more speculative on my end at least, but I always get a kick out of like schools. I guess I don't need to name certain schools, but you could probably look around and figure it out where the athletic department will fall on every sword needed to make sure that their head coach looks good in the headlines, you know, has all the support that he needs. You know, they'll have whatever embarrassing press conference answer they need to have to make their coach feel supported. So part of me, you know, I think there was negotiation financially, but I also think there was a little bit of like, hey, what's, you guys cut my pay. You kind of got me back on a, I think he was number 12 in the country in salary, but now he's clearly not the number 12 coach in the country anymore.
Right.
I mean, he is clearly on top five, could probably make a pretty strong case for top three at this point. And so I think it was a little bit of that, but then, you know, we brought it up before the show. Michigan has a side in this negotiation too. This is the third year in a row. Now 2020, it didn't make as much public headway because people were wondering if Michigan wanted him, let alone the NFL. But this is the third year in a row that feelers have been put out about the NFL's interest in Jim Harbaugh. Did not help Michigan's 2023 recruiting class. This is not helping Michigan's 2024 recruiting class. And so, you know, Michigan, and thinking specifically about Ward Manuel, is there an obligation to like stand up for Michigan here? And I think that there is. Now we'll talk about some of it in just a moment, but I do, you know, you brought up a good point. He's not out on an island saying, hey, Jim, you got to stop doing this. No more of this NFL stuff, wanting a bigger buyout, wanting some sort of assurance more than just, no man knows the future, but I really like coaching Michigan or whatever, you know, whatever quote Harbaugh will come out with. So I'm really fascinated in the negotiation standpoint. I'm curious to see if, you know, the reported new contract that they're working on, kind of what those numbers look like. Salary is a big one, of course, but also the years on it and how that buyout changes over the years, because Michigan has shown that it's not going to kill the product that they have in the locker room. I mean, if there was any consternation about Harbaugh's NFL deal last year, it never once showed in the locker room, not on the field, not in press conferences, not behind the scenes. But I do think that there is a long-term detriment to this happening again and again and again. So, Steve, I guess what are your thoughts on the negotiation side of things? I don't know that that's entirely what him interviewing with the Broncos was, but when I hear an agent's involved, when there's rumors and reports of a new contract, that's kind of where my mind went. Is okay. Clearly, something's being negotiated here. Your thoughts on how it was all handled on both sides?
Yeah, I mean the Ono and Harbaugh, President Ono, President
that
Santa
too.
Ono. Yeah,
Ward was absent from like, Harbaugh's statement, and Ono said got off the phone with Jim. He's returning. I mean, how often does a president break that news?
And had a graphic ready, like it wasn't. He didn't even just tweet it. Like there was a graphic with it on there saying, you know, it was almost like I legitimately wonder, did Ward find out at the same time that like you or I did?
Being That's on a Twitter, very right? fair question.
Like. It has to have been a distinct possibility, right? Which is, you know, fascinating. And again, I think I saw a tweet right before I got on where somebody asked John Bacon, is there another school where in the country where this level of like where nobody else knows what goes on at other, you know, how often are the relationship between the head coach, the president and the AD for public display the way that Michigan's has in this situation, right? I mean, very rarely do you see, especially something like that for the school president, who, how long has he been on the job?
4 months,
I think. At most, yeah. Right? And for him to come out and, like, you know, no meant, you know, to say, I'm gonna call Ward and let him know. You know, it's like just fascinating to me because, yeah, I think the one thing on Manuel's end that I'm curious, and maybe we'll find out, and or maybe we'll never know, is, yeah, if there was some some pushback saying, well, hey, you know, like, because he was pretty adamant after last season that that was it with the NFL.
Well,
right?
And if Harbaugh walks, the athletic director at a major college is such a thankless position. I will acknowledge that, right? Like, if things are, even when things are going extremely well across the athletic department, everyone, there's always something, and it's always the athletic director that takes the blame. But, like, in his defense, Harbaugh said he wasn't going to pursue the NFL, and then he did. And if he walks, no one's going to be like, and maybe a few people would be mad at Harbaugh, but the torch and pitchforks would be pointed at Ward Manuel.
Yes, vast majority. I mean, you had people on our board blaming Manuel for Beilein when Beilein left on his own terms, right? I mean, to my knowledge, he didn't leave.
Discussion for another day. I think there was more Ward could have done.
But would it have changed the outcome?
Is it fair to say he was the sole reason? Like, I don't think John Beilein was like,
I can't
sick
work
of
with
Ward,
this guy.
I'm out of
here.
Yeah,
I can't work with this guy. I'm going to go coach the Cavs for 3 weeks. So yeah, the whole angle, yeah, is fascinating. I know, again, on our board, people are already wondering how much longer will Ward be on the job. It definitely throws a wrench. I mean, you know, if you're him right now, you got to feel pretty. I can't imagine.
I would
he's
be
very
so. I would be so mad.
Yeah,
I would
I mean,
be so.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, yeah, Santa, everything about him seems great. I saw him at the December commencement. I've seen him in a couple other settings. It's incredible how easy he's making this job look. Because it's not supposed to be an easy job.
Yep.
But he is somehow attacking the academics, like, you know, like his credentials would suggest. And yet, when it comes to sports, he's like one of our message board. Like, if you told me he'd been a Victor's Club message board member since like 2010 and had like 3,000 posts under this anonymous account name, I would believe him because like that's what he tweets like, and he's very online. Whereas like Ward Manuel, I will say, you know, one thing that's hurting him here, at least in my opinion, no social media posting.
No public face.
An in-person press conference in at least 4 years, maybe even 5 or 6. I mean, it's not a thing that he does, whereas you feel like Gene Smith is explaining his decisions of like what he ate for breakfast.
Yeah,
you know, he's having a press conference every other day. Ohio State's athletic director, for those that don't know. And so
that's what I was going to say. Ono,
he's not helping himself.
Right. Yeah. Ono intelligently sort of seizing public opinion by pushing the I'm a fan also angle, right? I mean, how easy was it for him to rally? You know, I think we had people thinking that he was going to like pull a 180 on the NIL stuff when he showed up, that like just his presence alone was going to like change Michigan's recruiting momentum. I mean, I know some posters on the board joked about, I remember they got a couple commits right before signing day claiming it was because of Santa Ono that they picked up a commitment, you know? I mean, so very intelligent on his end to, sort of seize the public opinion and take advantage of this situation, really. I mean, not maliciously at all, just saying like he jumped on this and now is
it's free clout.
People want to put a statue.
He does not look bad here at all.
He's already working on like at statue level at this point. So yeah, that whole triangle there, coach, president, AD, is going to be over the next, like, say 6 months or so, is going to be fascinating because, like, I'm in total agreement with you. If I'm Ward Manuel, regardless of what role he has or hasn't played, and when we get to the nitty gritty, if fans, whoever are correct or incorrect, regardless, the way this played out today, I would not be happy at all. If I was him, I would feel very disrespected, honestly. I mean, you know, like you talk about a thankless spot to be. You talk about the job being thankless. Talk about a thankless spot to be in. I mean, you're basically undermining your athletic director, you know, to get a deal done with your head football coach. It's just, and again, in the public eye, you know, not behind closed doors. Like, this was done as publicly as possible. So I wonder if Ono thinks I should probably align myself with Harbaugh instead of
classic. Yeah. Pick the right side.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's because like if he had come out and said, you know, I stand with Ward Manuel as we both, you know, are hoping or want to keep Jim Harbaugh, you know, not going to get the same reaction as, hey, I just got off the phone with Jim. He's in, he's back. We're going to do this. I'm going to call Ward and let him know.
Tell the good news.
Yeah. Like, so yeah, no,
but I will say you mentioned is he just siding with Harbaugh? He should.
Yeah,
and this is not a slight at Ward, but the fans are probably closer to keep Harbaugh at all costs.
Yep.
And I always
absolutely
got, like find the boosters, find the donors, you know, pause a construction project if you have to, or start one for the football team. Like, just figure out how to keep Jim Harbaugh, because they finished in the top three of the AP poll for the first time since 1947, 1948. If anyone who is listening remembers those teams, let me know. We'll highlight you sometime, because it's been a very long time since they were at this level. Now, they've won a national championship in 97. They were fantastic in the 70s. You know, a lot of top five finishes, but and they're going to be really good next year. We'll talk about that on the other side of this break in just a moment. But this is a special moment, and Jim Harbaugh created it. Ward Manuel allowed it to happen by not firing Jim Harbaugh, by not caving to public opinion. So credit to him for that. But at some point, the president, especially, and I think the athletic director, do have to think about public opinion when it comes to this stuff. I mean, if you're Ward Manuel, I get the frustration of Harbaugh suddenly letting this become a thing again. But if the people that go to your games and buy your tickets and support your athletic department are all pretty much unanimously saying, surely you can find $12 million for Jim Harbaugh or whatever the number ends up being, you got to listen to them. And so Sansa's doing a great job. I mean, that's what a university president does. Is their job is to make people feel really good about the university and want to help contribute financially to the university. And siding with Harbaugh is probably the easiest way to do that. And it's also like kind of part of the job. If he came out and was being a thorn in the side or a stick in the mud, he would sound a lot like the previous president, right? And that's part of why he is the previous president. So yeah, to me, I think it's really smart. It's honestly refreshing. You know, I know no one really cares about the reporter's point of view, but it's really nice when there's a little bit more transparency or commentary. Or I also like when he shares our stories, which he has, you know, the one on Davis Warren that Alejandro wrote the other day. Again, he's just making that job look really easy. And I feel like Ward, by being kind of recluse from the public, is making it look, well, I think it's hard for anyone to really understand his side of things, because he's not sharing that side.
No idea what his side is, right? That's why I said, I mean, if we ever find out what that is, you know, it would make it a lot more interesting. And we can only guess, like I said, that maybe he, you know, kind of got a little aggressive with the, hey, like.
But maybe Harbaugh had like this terrible, terribly unreasonable demand.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like we never know. Yeah. So either way, though, it's clear. One thing's clear, that the Harbaugh-Manuel relationship is obviously not in a good spot. It can't be. If he's the one calling Ono to get this, I feel like that's what was said, right?
You could count on one hand, maybe even one finger, the amount of times Jim Harbaugh called Mark Schlissel.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Which is great. I think a president, athletic director, coach, if everyone's on the same page, that football team's going to go somewhere.
Best case scenario. Absolutely.
Yeah. But just how wild is it that did Mark Schlissel even like know Michigan had a football team?
Yeah, it's
like
no. kinda,
he wasn't going to be breaking this news. So So definitely an interesting situation, and does present questions about the Manuel Harbaugh relationship.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like I said, if we get the whole story at some point, it'll be fascinating to see. I don't know. Do we ever really, though? I don't know. Maybe, but.
Do you think the contract, if it's a very Harbaugh friendly contract, do you think that's a sign that maybe Santa kind of came in and said,
let's just get this done.
Forget the cost, forget whatever, forget the buyout. Just get him on board now. Because there's some value to that.
Yep. The contract, it'll paint the context. I think it's just, we won't know who wanted what. At first, did they come to a compromise? Did Jim get everything did he get everything he actually asked for? Like, we won't, the actual, negotiation tactics, we probably will never get the full, maybe. And like I said, maybe we'll get some of it.
If I reward point. Though, I would leave right? some of that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I wonder, we could get some, like I said, hard to get all of it, but yeah, I mean, you got to think here's my side, can we?
There's surely got to be one reporter out there who would filter,
take
the opposing side of this Harbaugh
take the
debate.
Info. Yep.
But regardless, Jim Harbaugh's back. Michigan seems to be, in my mind, they've already won a game this offseason based on all the returns that they have. We're going to talk about that on the other side of this commercial break. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
Welcome back. Thanks for waiting. So we talked about all the Jim Harbaugh stuff. Now let's shift to the players, the team. Michigan did lose some players to the NFL draft who had remaining eligibility. Mike Morris, DJ Turner, Jamon Green. I don't think Ryan Hayes or Oluwatimi had a remaining eligibility, but Mazi Smith. There were a couple, but I think every single player had a degree, if I'm not mistaken, or is going to get one in the spring. And then more notably to this discussion, it felt like every player who wasn't, it seems like everyone else who was on the fence or thinking about it came back. Blake Corum, Cornelius Johnson, Trevor Keegan, Zach Zinter.
Jenkins.
Chris Jenkins, that was a big one too. Michael Barrett for a sixth season. I mean, some of this is, I think, the COVID, there's extra eligibility involved. And somebody, I don't know if any of those players, I heard, there was a report that Chris Jenkins got a top 100 draft grade. I assume Blake Corum would have gone in the top 100. But I don't know that the other decisions were necessarily, I don't think anyone turned down a first round deal. Like I think there was rumors about CJ Stroud. I don't think NIL is getting to that point. But Steve, this does seem a little NIL driven. Like, I don't think Blake Corum is coming back if he doesn't have an opportunity to make a significant coin, maybe even more than he would make if he were drafted, say 75th overall.
Sure.
He's a Heisman favorite among the favorites probably for next year. He's the face of Michigan football. He's a national name, and he has a chance to go down as, you know, one of the top two running backs in Michigan football history. So Steve, I guess where I'll start with this is what player's decision, I don't know if surprise is the right word, because we usually have a good sense of where things are going before they're announced, but maybe if you're zooming out a little bit, which player's decision is the most notable or surprising to you?
Well, I think Corum has to be number one, even with a potential NIL boon for him, just because of, well, how prolific and how great his season was. You know, it's kind of one of those, you're like, well, that guy's going to go, right? I mean, I think
we especially assume... at running back, right? Yeah, I mean, that's such a short shelf life in the NFL. You think, okay, you're unanimous All-American. What more do you have to prove?
Well, it's the same thing. Like, it's a different situation. I tweeted this about Stroud this morning. I thought the idea of him potentially coming back was one of the stupidest things. There's no way Ohio State, I don't think any team in the country could have raised enough NIL to even approach, you know, what he's going to make as a top five pick, I'm sure. Top three, four, probably. I can't imagine he gets past Indy. You know, so same thing, like, no way to improve your stock. I don't know how Blake Corum improves his stock, to be honest, right? So I think that's why, or where, like you said, as not a first-round pick, that's where NIL can really pay dividends for a major program like Michigan. So, and that goes into sort of how Michigan's pitched it too, where they're not throwing the bags around on the recruiting trail for unsigned high school guys, but they are telling guys, if you come here, you compete and you perform, you will do very well for yourself. I don't doubt that the recent Valiant push, the one more year thing, have to imagine that played a role. I think they've even specifically said, right?
It's about as clear as day that they were trying to do something for that. And very for those smart. Who don't know, yes, really smart. And that's to me, that was always like where Michigan could win with the NIL. Is like every year for basketball and for football, seems like there's like 200,000 fans. Like even the players who are projected first round picks, like sometimes they regret or they feel bad leaving early, just because there is such a colossal fan base who does like the one more year chants during games or goes crazy in social media comments. So yeah, for those who don't know, Valiant U of M, the NIL collective, one of the, I believe maybe the biggest Michigan endorsed one. They had this campaign and they were pretty upfront about the players too, which was, I thought was notable. You know, Trevor Keegan, Zach Zinter, Cornelius Johnson, Blake Corum were kind of the headliners, and they were trying to raise NIL collective funds that were geared toward come back one more year.
Yep. So besides that, I think probably Zach Zinter is probably the other guy. I don't know if probably not a first rounder, but I think he had a shot. If he tested well, I think he'd had a shot to get drafted in a pretty decent spot. So to get both him in and Trevor Keegan back with what they added in the portal, I mean, losing Oluwatimi is huge, and center is going to be probably one of the bigger question marks for Michigan next year. But even with Drake Nugent coming in and a couple younger but semi-experienced third-year guys now in Crippen and Anderson, you know, they could compete for a third straight Joe Moore with all the talent and ability they have up front. So, you know, yeah, Corum, the big one where you're kind of like, wow, that's like, I can't believe he's, you know, kind of one of those, I can't believe he's coming back. You know, I can't believe he's going to play for Michigan again next year. But besides that, I think Zinter's probably the one other guy that I kind of look at and say, you know, that one I think was the only other one I looked at like, is he for sure going to come back, or might he kind of make a run at it? I mean, here's the other thing too to think about, Zach. Michigan offensive linemen, I know they've won the Joe Moore the last 2 years, but the end of, like, Michigan's offensive line guys the last six, like basically since Harbaugh's been there, are killing it in the NFL. Saw Ben Bredesen had a good game for the Giants yesterday when they beat Minnesota. John Runyon Jr. might be Green Bay's best offensive lineman right now. I mean, those are the guys. Cesar Ruiz had a huge bounce back year for New Orleans. I think he had a rough year last year, but I think he really bounce back this season. Michael Onwenu is making a great career for himself in New England. I mean, guys that are leaving Michigan up front are not just making NFL rosters, but having successful careers. So, you know, I think I got to imagine there had to have been some internal debate, maybe for both Keegan and Zinter, where it's like, you know, I might not be a first round guy, but I know I can make an NFL roster. And, you know, we know that we've been learning from some of the best. I mean, it's just, you know, so that's where I'm kind of at on that one.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Corum's the most surprising. And you know, kind of caught wind of it during Fiesta Bowl week. Like, oh, this is probably how it's going to go down. But if you really, like, zoom out and think about it, I mean, the last unanimous All-American who came back to Michigan. Steve, do you remember who it was? Do you know this one? I think I tweeted it out once.
Not Jake Butt.
No, it's long. Unanimous All-American. Trip Wellborn.
Oh, geez. Okay. Yeah.
So it's been a long time. I mean, even before players were leaving early for the draft, like ton over and over and over, it's usually unanimous All-American. That's kind of like the, you have done your work. Good luck in your NFL career. Cause yeah, there's just not a ton left to prove in college. And really that'll be kind of the storyline. You know, that'll be probably the first question for Blake Corum is like, you know, what are the goals this year? But
an individual, right? I mean,
it might just be the team goals in defense of his decision to return, which I don't think it needs to be defended. I mean, he's welcome to do whatever he wants, but he did miss the Ohio State game. You know, he did, well, most True. Of it. He did miss the Big Ten championship. He did miss the college football playoff. And I think, I mean, personal opinion, I think Michigan beats TCU if Blake Corum's on the field.
I agree.
I think they score those two goal line situations. I think they have a more consistent offense in the other parts of that first half. So I can see, you know, not just, I mean, you know, the team goals are always kind of the cliche, but like if he's healthy, might be in New York for the Heisman Trophy ceremony.
Gotta assume he's in New
York. Probably playing in the national championship game. Don't know if they win based on how Georgia looked, but at the same time, you know, there is more for him personally to accomplish, but it does feel like this is it's a perfect storm for Michigan to have Blake Corum back. But really the one that the two that I guess surprised me for two different reasons, or I guess same reasons, but for Cornelius Johnson, just because he had a degree, he was a graduate in December and he's been a three-ish year starter. I don't know that his NFL prospects were like sky high, but he had a great game against Ohio State, won two Big Ten titles, you know, and the receiver room is really crowded too. Like, it's not like he's going to go off for 1,200 yards next year, but that one I think is quietly very important.
I was just going
to
say,
I mean, Michigan losing Ronnie Bell, they lost Andrell Anthony to the transfer portal. They have plenty of talent still on the roster, right? Roman Wilson, Darius Clemens, AJ Henning. You could probably continue going down the list, Tyler Morris and Marion Walker. But yeah, to have someone experienced and a real, like, true outside guy who can be the deep ball threat, be kind of someone that JJ McCarthy's got great chemistry with, I think that that's quietly valuable. Then the other one is Michael Barrett, because I think he has a 3-semester graduate program. Quietly a work smarter, not harder move by Michigan, getting so many players in these 3-semester master's degree programs this past fall so that they can come back if they want to, knowing that there's that extra COVID year of eligibility and everything that comes with that. So I think that one to me is emblematic that of the culture deal at Michigan right now, that I think there's a true, because he's not coming back to a guaranteed starting job. Junior Colson is returning. Ernest Hausman was added. I think if I were to pick who I think would start, I think I'd maybe lean Hausman. I maybe give Barrett the nod just because he's the incumbent, but I don't think it's a guarantee that Barrett is going to play a huge role. And he graduated last year, won two Big Ten. I mean, he was one of the guys holding the trophy. So, and he's going to be 23. But so for me, the fact that he's coming back for a sixth season where he's not guaranteed a starting job, at least I don't think he's guaranteed a starting job, And the room is going to be more crowded. Jimmy Rolder's a year older. Don't know Nakai Hill Green's situation, but you know, he was out this season. Yeah. That was kind of what allowed Barrett to be a starter. I think most people were penciling Nakai in as a starter. So it's a more crowded room, but for him to come back, to me, says that this is a train a lot of players want to be on. We can talk about the NIL. We can talk about, oh, the draft grade was this or that. There's players who want to play for Michigan. They have that Ohio State juju right now. It felt like Ohio State would always have a player who would, not nonsensically, but like go against what I think people thought was going to happen and say, I want to be a part of Ohio State again because of the culture, because of the roster that you have, the opportunity to win a national championship. Feels like Michigan has that right now in 2023. And Steve, we've kind of teased it a couple times. I think I would personally pick Michigan number two if I were to do a preseason poll. I think Georgia, they're going to lose more, right? They're losing Stetson Bennett. They're losing Darnell Washington. They're losing, I assume, a decent number of defensive starters and other key players. But they are Georgia. I mean, they've won two years in a row. They've only lost one game, and you could argue that it was a meaningless conference championship game where they were already going to make it to the playoffs no matter what. Can't really put Michigan ahead of them right now, but I would put Michigan number two, and I think they would have a case as number one. RB1's back, QB1's back, head coach is back, Donovan Edwards is back, eight defensive starters. I added up 33 two-deep players from this season. Are back, three offensive linemen. I mean, there really isn't a position group. Maybe cornerback. Cornerback is maybe the one where it's you aren't entirely sure who's going to be a star. You know, maybe across from Mike Zane, we're still in Will Johnson. And even that position, right? I just named two guys who were really good in really big games. So, Steve, Michigan number two. I mean, is this a what kind of how did the past week? Either solidify or modify your expectations for Michigan this fall?
I think two is good. I think the other thing I mentioned before is kind of funny. Every off, we always harp on the Penn State being like the off-season darling for everybody every year. And then they rarely, I think actually this would be the off-season. I think I'm buying Penn State this year. If I was ranking preseason, I think with CJ Stroud leaving, I would have Penn State ahead of Ohio State. Now, don't know if Ohio State's going to go into the portal for, you know, if another quarterback, if there's a quarterback out there that enters or whatever, maybe that's the route Ohio State goes. Otherwise, you're going to have a pretty much totally inexperienced starting quarterback. Talented,
like, right? Five-star guys.
Always talented, but inexperienced. You know, I think Penn State with Drew Aller, who got a much more ample experience this year than anybody else, more than anybody behind CJ Stroud did, and a couple really good, really, really good young defensive players. Abdul Carter, I think Kalen King out of Detroit is another big timer.
Running backs aren't bad either.
Singleton's got some Saquon Barkley to him. If you're comparing Penn State, I don't think he is Saquon Barkley, but he's definitely got that home run capability. So yeah, on paper, I'm taking Penn State. Well, they got Olu Fashanu to come back too. You talk about culture. Fashanu was a first round, I feel like a first round projection. You get a first round tackle back as well. So on paper, I'm actually thinking Penn State is the team behind Michigan, but I think two's totally fine. I also think, you know, I think getting Jenkins back too, you know, and again, getting all these guys back is significant. But having another of that depth up front, You know, I think Kenneth Grant will be ready by the time next year starts. He got a lot more snaps, I think, than people realize this season. But you don't have to necessarily, I mean, I know him and Jenkins will play the same position, but like it allows them to ease a couple more of these young guys into a bigger role still. Michigan should be one of the best run defenses in the country again next year, right? I mean, that really, Harrell will be back again. He's Michigan's run stopper at the edge spot. I think Braden McGregor is going to be a popular breakout pick next year, you know, which I think made it the Oki departure was not as maybe as big a deal as people made it out to be. Not to mention they got, you know, Josiah Stewart out of the portal, who we had as a 4-star guy, you know, as a guy that
Derek Moore's snap count kept
that going yes up too. Yes, Derek
Moore played Moore's 41 snaps in the Big Ten championship game.
There you go. And you talk about, he's got that size athleticism combo. You know, not your undersized guy who's just way more athletic and can get around that. I mean, he's a guy that offensive tackles are going to have a very hard time with, because he can either go by you, or he's going to have an array of moves that'll let him run over you or get past you on the inside. So either way, Michigan, excellent. I think special teams will be fascinating next year. I think that's one big area that Michigan's been really – I love talking about special teams. But it is one area, though, they're losing both guys. So that's a big area. And you're talking about Jake Moody might be Michigan's greatest kicker they've ever had. He's at least top two, if not the best. And I know Brad Robbins didn't have the best final season, but he's also punted for 4 years, I think. So
yeah, well, and he got invited to the NFL draft combine. He was someone who punting yardage, that one like blocked punt against Rutgers actually like kind of kept him out of the top 10 of all those rankings, but also like his hang time, his placement, I think that's stuff that I wish the special team statistics were more consistently available, because I think someone like him would get more appreciation.
Well, but so valuable piece either still, way then, right?
Yeah, yeah, valuable. Yeah, Tommy Doman's got big shoes to fill. He knows it. I did get to talk to him during the Fiesta Bowl, so I'll eventually – I'm excited, and I'm sure you are too. Like, this is the most annoying part of the offseason is behind
us. I can take some time off. No, I won't take any time off. Maybe. But yeah, we can take a breath now and
we can start digging in and looking at this team and fans get to as well.
I was just gonna say fans should be excited because on paper this team has a chance. I think you'd agree this team has a chance to be better than last year's team did. I mean, it's hard not to think that that's a real possibility with who they bring back. I mean, yeah, I would say two is fair just based on Georgia does lose a lot, but Georgia is obviously, I think there's probably five or six teams in the country that don't rebuild. They absolutely reload. And while Georgia is going to lose a lot of guys, they're bringing in, you know, I would imagine, I wouldn't be shocked if they're are on the talent composite, if they're probably even higher. They're not going to have the experience, but just from the way they've recruited the last two or three cycles, I think that they might even be higher ranked in that than they were this season. So, yeah, fascinating to see. But, yeah, I mean, great news overall all around for Michigan today, the kind of the final pieces of the puzzle. And then, it should be an enjoyable offseason again to break down what could be a nice run at a three-peat at the Big Ten championship.
It'll be enjoyable for the fans. I feel like reporters, we're going to have – I feel like those spring practice interviews are going to be hysterical because we're not going to have anything – like there's no – like what's the biggest question? I mean, there are question marks.
Right.
And I'll have stories about it, but it is kind of fascinating that, like – I'll say this. If all the teams in the country had to play tomorrow with their current rosters what they have on campus right now, I think I would take Michigan over all of them. I think Georgia, by the time the season comes around, should be the number one team. They've earned that. But this Michigan team feels like they could run out a championship caliber roster like tomorrow. I mean,
and like you said, even the spots where they're replacing starters, they're replacing them with guys who have a ton of experience. You talk about Derek Moore, you talk about Braden McGregor has played a lot. And then you know, you supplement that, and we were going to do an episode on this. We still can. I'm assuming we'll have all the time in the world to talk about it. But just imagine if Michigan gets a couple more first-year contributors out of their recruiting class. I know it's not
2 years in a row. They've had fantastic freshmen.
Yes, I know it's not the class that people envision rankings-wise, and not, you know. But I do think there are a few guys who may have a say at some point next season, right? And then we talk about how great the freshman class was this year. There are a lot of some of the higher ranked guys in that class are guys that have yet to really get their opportunity. Like a Zeke Berry or a Keon Sabb, you know, particularly in the defensive backfield. Miles Pollard's a guy that Steve Klinkscale loved. You know, maybe one of those guys is the answer at corner. Obviously more thinking towards Pollard, or the other two are probably, I think Zeke Berry could be a nickel safety, Sabb definitely a safety, maybe even a guy they'd put in the box. Well, Makari Page coming back too. Again, you talk about another big time contributor, guy that really took a big step forward this year. So yeah, I mean, even in spots they have to replace, they're almost reloading. Really, we think about it.
Yeah,
even at tight end, Colson Loveland. So
And AJ Barner. I mean, it's that, like, yeah, the transfer portal. I do think Michigan had some necessary wins. I think some of it's an embarrassment of riches, thinking about the offensive line. But yeah, I think they actually, like really got some big victories in that transfer portal. Thinking about Houseman, Barner. I mean, you could probably go down the whole list.
Yeah, Ladarius Henderson, the whole thing.
Yep. And we probably will go down the whole list. And now that the part where we're like looking over, we're constantly like refreshing our messages or social media, trying to make sure we don't miss a breaking news story. That part has settled down. Now we get to really dig in. I know I'm going to have a depth chart on offense and on defense tonight, and then start kind of digging into some of the big questions. I have a lot of interviews. Got to interview a lot of the guys we don't get to talk to during the Fiesta Bowl media week. So going to have some fun stories. Kenneth Grant, Tommy Doman, a few others. I'll leave a couple of them as surprises, but regardless, for Steve Lorenz, this has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Be sure to check out all of our stories over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. Lots of coverage from the Harbaugh deal of it all, but also this team. Plenty. I mean, this is the first, I think I probably was kind of like this last season, but this is the first offseason where I'm saying the fans, there's no such thing as too much hype for this team. I mean, obviously they have to show it on the field, but if you're actually looking on paper, and you're a fan, this is a team that you get to be, you can drink the Kool-Aid on. I'll give you permission to drink the Kool-Aid on the 2023 Michigan football team. Anyway, this has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. We'll see you next time.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the side. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes now streaming. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with the Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. The subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.